Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome back to the Midweek Takeaway, the podcast that brings you the latest insights from the world of business, finance and resource exploration. Today we have a special episode featuring Sapangai, Chief Commercial Officer of Sovereign Metals. Sovereign has just released a brand new corporate presentation titled Graphite by Product Strategy Update, which outlines the latest developments in their graphite and rutile project. In this episode, Sapan will walk us through the key takeaways from the presentation, shedding light on the company's strategy, market positioning and the exciting opportunities ahead. If you're keen to follow along, you can access the full presentation via the Sovereign Metals website or through the link in the episode description. So without further ado, let's dive into the presentation, please, Sapan.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Phil. So this is on our website. We've called it Graphite Byproduct Strategy Update. Usual disclaimers apply. We are ASX and AIM listed. So Cassia, I think everyone knows Cassia now. It's, you know, the world's largest rutile find. Almost 18 million tons of contained rutile today known in the resource. It's the second largest known flake graphite resource with 24 million tons. Cassia is a primary rutile project, and it's the only known deposit where graphite is a byproduct. So I hate to use the word unique because everyone believes their project is unique, but I dare say I haven't seen a rutile and graphite deposit anywhere on the planet apart from ours. We cover around 200 square kilometers of mineralized area, making this an absolutely massive project. So a couple of things I just wanted to talk through in terms of the slides that we've put out. The first one is around the weathered geology and how that drives certain advantages for Cassia. Basically, if you think of this bar down the left-hand side where you have the surface, the ground surface at the top, and as you get deeper and deeper, this is the transition that occurs within the rock. So you've got very weathered rock at the top. That's the stuff that my colleague's holding and crushing in their hands. You know, you can almost think of it as a cake-like material. It's essentially soil. It's sand. It's not hard rock. Over the course of the depth, things do turn to hard rock. We at Cassia have no intention of mining hard rock. We have about 20, sometimes 30 meters of this weathered mineralization, which you can get down to using a bucket and spade. There's no requirement to drill or blast it. But why is this important? And why is it important in terms of the test work that we've been putting out in our RNSs around Cassia? Well, one of the key things we've figured out is because we are a weathered deposit, we have very low sulfur levels. Why is that important? High sulfur levels in your graphite makes it electrochemically imbalanced, is what they say, which essentially means it doesn't work quite so well as a battery or other end uses for the graphite. What essentially happens is the weathered material has sulfur in the form of sulfates, which get washed away over time, whereas the fresh rock has no, obviously, any washing away because it's deep underground. And the sulfur, which occurs as sulfides, is retained within the graphite there. But that feeds really into our simple processing. I think this infographic kind of says it all. There's no requirement at Cassia for drilling or blasting or crushing or grinding. We simply pick the stuff up, take it to a scrubber, and that goes straight into the plant. Because we're not grinding the material, it also ensures that those larger flakes, which have a higher price in the market, they're not crushed down, they're not grinded down into smaller flakes as part of just the simple mining and plant feeding process. Here we've just looked at Cassia versus some other producers currently, the largest private producer outside of China, the world's largest listed global producer, a North American producer and a European producer. And on all fronts, you can see that, you know, we have this flake size distribution down the bottom, which shows that actually most of our flake, most of our graphite occurs within the large to jumbo range. And that range essentially gets the larger prices in the market. much more so than the smaller flakes, which end up in the battery space. As you're well aware, we've done a whole bunch of test work, and we continue to do that on the graphite. We've shown that the graphite works for refractories end use, so that's within steel making and other industries. It works within the expandables, and last year we had an RNS out showing that we actually can produce outstanding battery anode material using Kaseya flake graphite. Bottom line is, test work completed to date has shown that Kaseya graphite is suitable for 94% of the graphite end uses. Just very quickly, what have we been doing apart from a load of test work on the graphite since Rio came in as a strategic investor in July 2023? We completed the pilot phase throughout most of last year, which included the mining, processing, deposition, and all the related trials at the Kaseya test pit. We optimized the PFS, and you saw what those figures looked like earlier this year. And we're currently working on the DFS, which is expected in Q4 this year. A picture tells a thousand words, so I think rather than just talking through what we've been doing, you can see here on the pilot phase. The pilot phase was conducted with oversight from Sovereign, from the Sovereign Rio Technical Committee. This is the lay of the land before we started any pilot phase, any pilot mining. It took us about 2 months to get all the permits in place to essentially mine. It's taking the same permitting steps as we would do for the entire project. We ended up doing a load of dry mining, hydro mining, a lot of stockpiling, test work on the material as well, processing the material. And as of the 5th of March, we have shown that actually we've been able to rehabilitate that land, get the farmers back on the land, and get them farming without missing a planting season.
Yeah, obviously, I just wanted to touch on that because obviously that was an important announcement on, as you say, on the Wednesday. So just explain how significant that is, because obviously the Kaseya test pit has been rehabilitated, allowing the landowners to literally immediately resume that sort of maize farming without missing a planting season. So I mean, how significant is that you've managed to fit that in and they can still resume without missing that season, Sapan?
When we asked the farmers on the land, when we requested them to whether we could mine on their farmland, they were convinced they wouldn't be seeing that land back for at least 2, 2.5 years. So the fact that they're already on there, they haven't missed a planting season. They're now planting crops that they've never planted before within a soil that we've actually upgraded. So, I've said this multiple times. Our rehabilitation process is not just to give the land back over time, it's to give land back for better use of the, especially in agricultural use, than what it was before. And I think we're seeing that. And then adding on top of that, the fact that we have built in a lot of training in terms of sustainable conservation farming. I mean, we've already seen that that's helped triple crop yields for a bunch of the farmers. We've rolled it out to 90 farmers who are using it now. We're rolling it out to another 360 farmers. So hopefully it'll catch on.
So you're not just making good, you're making better.
And I've made this point multiple times. It's if you're building a tier one company, it's not just about your customers, your investors, your suppliers, especially in the mining world. You're getting nowhere if you don't have that local community support, you don't have that governmental support. So not only do we want to talk about how important it is, but we want to show how important it is. And I think, we're doing that. Very quickly, I think you guys probably have these figures on the back of your eyelids by now. The optimized PFS provided results to show that Kaseya has a $2.3 billion pre-tax NPV. It'll be producing EBITDA, or gross profit, whatever you want to call it, of well over $400 million a year. It'll be doing that for 25 years. At the end of those 25 years, we've still got 70% of the resource to go, which means that in actual fact, Kaseya is probably a 60, 70-year mine. And you get all of that for a $665 million outlay It would be the largest, the world's largest rutile producer, would be the world's largest graphite producer, will be the world's lowest cost producer in both those materials too.
So, Sapan, you're right. We've heard these figures many times before. But if you were to drill and assess the other 70%, are you telling me that the NPV then should be, 6 to 7 billion?
So the thing with NPV is the further out the cash flows, the less impact they have because it's a
Okay.
net present value. It's what is it? What is the value today? And given the time value of money, would you like a tenner today, Kev, or would you like a tenner in a year's time from me? Well, a
Yeah,
tenner in a year's time is not
I'd
worth the
like
same as a
20
tenner
quid
today.
now, please.
Exactly. So, we got to year 25, and we saw that we had only mined 30% of the resource, and we thought to ourselves, well, we could put a 60, 70-year mine life on this thing, but it's not going to have a massive impact on that net present value, which is a figure that your fund managers, your financiers, your customers, your strategic investors, they hone in on that figure. We thought, 25 years gives us ample cash flows.
And there is the potential, obviously, for whoever to come in and up production from what you're considering doing, and therefore it then becomes a 40 or 50 year project. But the reality is, would that flood the market with rutile, you think? Or because it's this type of rutile, it actually wouldn't flood the market. It would just take a lot of the other production of rutile off the market.
So have a look at the steady state rutile production figure on here. It's about 250,000 tons of rutile a year. We're currently producing 500,000 tons a year, and some might say, "Oh, so you're going to be half the market." Well, 5 years ago we were producing 750,000 tons. 5 years before that we were producing 1 million tons. The reason why it's come down to 500,000 tons is because there just isn't enough rutile in the world, and what we're doing is substituting natural rutile that you can find in the ground with synthetic rutile, with upgraded ilmenite products. Ilmenite being the more abundant but less commercial titanium feedstock than rutile. So let's look at the entire titanium demand market, right? The world's demanding around 9 to 10 million tons of titanium feedstock. So when you take that into consideration and you look at a quarter of a million tons a year, we're not going to be flooding a market.
So you're talking about 2.5%, maybe 3% of the world production.
Of the world's of the world's titanium feedstock production. I mean, the other point to make is by the time we're online, we expect that rutile production will be more like 350,000 tons a year. So we'd only be replacing what we've lost in the last few years.
And how does that sit then with the steady state graphite production? 265,
Yeah.
256 thousand
So
tons.
let's get on to that. It's worthwhile getting into the weeds on the graphite. I mean, this is the graphite byproduct strategy after all. Let's jump this cost curve. The first thing about graphite is that there's three issues that mean that the world just can't compete with China on graphite. Now, the world requires about 1.6 million tons of graphite a year. China produces 1.2 million tons of it. We actually have 800 million tons, if not more, graphite in the world. So we've actually got, 500 years of supply of graphite. It's not a scarce commodity. Yes, different graphite is used for different applications, and not all graphite is the same, but we have a lot of it, right?
That's a lot. That's a lot of pencils, isn't it, in anybody's book?
Absolutely. Second thing, why are we putting out a lot of information on graphite? Because it's an opaque market with opaque pricing. People don't understand it. They don't understand that when we say the word graphite, we're actually talking about a basket of different sized carbon flakes that end up in different industrial uses, everything from batteries and lubricants to pencils to refractories to nuclear reactors, the whole gamut. And because of that, because of the widely varying specs within graphite, it's hard to secure development finance for a standalone graphite project, right? So when you're outside of China trying to build a graphite project on its own merit, you really need to know that, you need to open up that opaque pricing and market for the for any potential development financiers. Third point is China's production cost is $257 a ton, right? Why is that important? Well, let's look at this cost curve, right? For those who aren't so familiar with the mining world's cost curves, basically, the wider you are on this chart, the wider the bar, the bigger a producer you are. Sovereign is the widest bar on this, which means that we would be the largest producer outside of China. The lower your bar, the lower your costs. That's essentially all this is showing. So the fact that Cassia sits at $241 a ton versus China's $257 a ton, and everyone else is anywhere between $400 and $1,500 a ton, shows that actually Sovereign would essentially is, or Cassia is the only graphite project that can compete with China today as a potential source of flake graphite.
From a pricing perspective, that obviously puts Cassia in a wonderful position, and obviously Sovereign in a wonderful position. But do we see, because of the price of the other producers being higher, that China and Cassia could actually provide the whole 1.6 million tons, or does the market envisage that more than 1.6 million tons of graphite is going to be required going forward as we produce maybe more batteries, more usages for the graphite?
Look, I think there's a view that there is this energy transition that will increase the demand for graphite. We don't want to pin all our hopes on everyone driving electric vehicles by 2030. Instead, I think it's much more prudent of us to say, well, where can we sell our graphite today and what kind of prices can we get for it? And that's why we've done a lot of test work to show that our graphite actually goes into your bog standard industries like steel production, like refractories, like foundry use, expandable use, fire retardants, and all of it. So we're not pinning our hopes that, all of our graphite will end up in a battery, which will end up in an electric vehicle, because that's all we'll be driving in the future. If we do, great. If we don't, I mean, that would be that wouldn't be the best news for a lot of these potential graphite companies. Just to give you an indication, I mean, you talked about pricing. If we look at this chart, your small flake graphite, which ends up in your batteries, last quarter was getting around $560 a ton. I mean, that's around here. And if you drew a line across here, you're cutting straight across a lot of the future potential production here, which then I guess feeds on to my second point, which is that's exactly why a lot of other companies have started looking downstream. Instead of being a graphite miner, you become an anode producer because you're able to capture some margin there, hopefully. The anode material, the end material that a battery manufacturer wants to buy off you, has a higher price. But of course, getting your graphite out of the ground and into an anode shape in itself has huge cost implications as well. We don't have a, we just don't have that situation at Cassia. We have no need to go downstream. We consider ourselves a mining company, not a chemicals company, not a chemistry company. We're not looking at any downstream move towards battery anode production. Because, as I said before, we're the only ones that can compete with China's low-cost production, even in today's market. So I guess, look, concluding on this presentation, management has not forgotten that Cassia is a primary rutile project. I just want to remind everyone that a lot of the test work that we're doing on the graphite today, we had done on the rutile as soon as we had found we had rutile at Cassia. So in terms of end uses for our rutile, in terms of its quality, how much its metallurgy, we had done all that work. You can go back and look at our RNSs from 2021 onwards to see that we had done a lot of the work on the rutile. We're just getting the graphite up the curve as well. So that by the time we get to a definitive feasibility study, as a management team can truly be definitive about what we put in that study. We're the only graphite play with a blue chip major as a strategic investor, that being Rio Tinto. Rio obviously is the world's largest titanium dioxide producer outside of China. It's also got a battery materials division. You've seen that Rio has very recently gone quite big into lithium. Lithium is on the other side of the lithium ion battery from graphite. So if you do believe in that energy transition, you can only be long on graphite. We're potentially the largest and lowest cost graphite producer globally. I've made that point a number of times. Our graphite is high quality, it's high value, it can be used in all major end use markets. And look, we just keep progressing with the Casia DFS, and we hope to have that towards the middle of Q4 2025.
Excellent. Well, we say obviously, obviously, thank you for coming on, Sapan. It's been great to take us through the presentation. And we'll say, Sapan Guy, CCO of Sovereign Metals, thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
It's been a pleasure, gents. Thank you very much.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.